On the basis of democracy, we convene, rooted in the timeless ideals of liberty and justice once only dreamed. With unwavering dedication, we embrace the call to champion America's values for one and all. In the Jewish tradition, we are reminded that the work of repairing the world cannot be sidelined. We must not turn our back on the task at hand, but stand together united to make our land grand. I'm your host, Lisa Singer. Thank you for joining me today. Together, let us strive for a better world in every way. Aliyah is a Hebrew term that translates to going up. And within the Jewish context, it specifically denotes immigration to Israel, symbolizing the return of Jews to their ancestral homeland. Anyone who moves to Israel is said to be making Aliyah. The inscription on Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion's tombstone features three significant dates: his birth, his death, and the date he made Aliyah, July 13, 1906. Ben-Gurion, the first Prime Minister of Israel, stood as a prominent statesman and a pivotal figure in the establishment of the State of Israel. By marking the Aliyah date on his grave, we honor his legacy and contributions to the founding of Israel, while simultaneously acknowledging the significance of each individual's journey to forge a new life in the homeland. Today, I am recording this opening segment as I travel to Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, Israel. Last Friday, I received the devastating news that my dear friend Shoshana Axler passed away. Just 2 days later, we were all heartbroken to hear about the tragic death of Hirsch Goldberg Polin, who Hamas terrorists assassinated after enduring 11 months in captivity in Gaza. My heart bears this weight, yet my determination to pay a Shiva visit to the families of both Shoshana and Hirsch remains steadfast, even in light of all the new travel and security challenges I face. Worldwide, approximately 9 million Americans live abroad in various countries, with around 500,000 residing in Israel. 5 years ago, my dear friend Shoshana Axler was one of those courageous Americans who made the move from Chicago to Israel, embracing a new chapter in her life as a retiree while assuming the full-time roles of a devoted mother and grandmother to her children already living there. Our recorded conversation from 2 weeks ago explored her journey from America, her exciting experiences in Israel, and the challenges she faced in her new homeland. When we spoke, she was vibrant and full of life and looked great. Her laughter and insightful reflections still resonate in my memory. Tragically, the day after our conversation, Shoshana fell gravely ill. Just 1 week later, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and heartbreakingly, she passed away last Friday. In the wake of this unimaginable loss, I reflect on the beauty of our many years of shared memories together. Last year, I celebrated a joyful occasion in Israel, the wedding of Shoshana's grandson, Charlie, alongside many friends from Chicago. Now, I return exactly 1 year later to honor her memory during a time of deep sorrow, doing all I can to provide comfort to her children, especially to her daughter, my close friend, Neely, whom you met last week on our first podcast episode. May this episode serve as a tribute to Shoshana and the profound impact she made during her 75 years on this earth. Shoshana was truly a person who uplifted everyone she encountered. I hope you find inspiration in the stories shared today, and may they inspire you to perhaps go up to Israel, even for a visit. Thank you for joining us. Hello, my friend Shoshana. How are you? It is so amazing to see you.
Great to see you as well.
It is so great to see your face. We speak every Friday by WhatsApp, and we speak often by the phone, but I don't often get to see your face. I did get to see you last September when I was in Israel for your grandson's wedding, and that was glorious, truly glorious. But I love seeing your face. I miss you. And thank you for doing this. Welcome to my podcast. And today I was hoping that we could talk about your experience of making Aliyah and moving to Israel from Chicago. So my first question is, what is a nice Chicago girl like you doing in Israel?
Well, born and raised in Chicago was during a good time. I lived during good times in Chicago. Always was raised in a Zionist home, in a religious Zionist home, with Israel and what's going on in Israel always being important. By the time I was born, there was already a country. I did not live in pre-Israel days. And my family was always concerned with what went on in Israel and that kind of a life. My dad was the director of the Zionist organization in Chicago for many years. It was always an important subject. The education I received in Jewish schools in Chicago was all Torah-oriented and religious Zionist. And that points you in the direction of Israel being central to your life. And then I raised my children in a home similar to the one I was raised in. And they also were raised with religious Zionist education. And then they all moved here too. They, as they say, they drank the Kool-Aid and got on board. And the youngest one first, then the middle one, then the oldest one. And I have, thank God, 11 grandchildren, all of whom are here. So Chicago was not going to be my final stop.
Do you miss it here? What do you miss here?
I have friends in Chicago, but my friends that are my age, those who do not have children living in Chicago, are one foot out the door when they retire to move near their children. So little by little, my friendship base in Chicago is shrinking. There will always be friends that I have in Chicago that aren't moving and aren't going anywhere and have their children nearby. But that's what I miss. I miss my friends. I guess I also miss the first snow of winter. I don't like cold. I don't like winter. But that first day of snow is something beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Isn't it? Chicago in the winter is so beautiful, seeing the lake and downtown and all the Christmas lights. I love it. I know I shouldn't say
Until
it,
you have
but
to
I do.
shovel, and then I'm not so happy.
That's a little less fun. There's no question about that. And then salting, and then walking through the slush, and certainly walking 20 minutes to and from Shul is not pleasant when it's below zero, but.
I try to focus on that first snow, those first hours sitting in your house, watching it up through the picture window when it's all white and soft and pretty. Yeah, I miss those 20 minutes.
But the weather in Israel is not bothering you. It is hotter than hot there. The summer is brutal. That's a big
I have
change.
a very narrow comfort zone that my friends do tease me about. When it's in the 80s and certainly the 90s, I start complaining about the heat. And when it goes below the 70s, I start complaining about the cold. But the cold isn't as cold and it doesn't last as long. And the summer, you go from air conditioning to air conditioning. In the winter in Chicago, I'd go from heating to heating. So it's kind of about the same in many ways. I mean, the opposite.
So you would equate the brutal heat in the summer of Israel to the brutal cold in Chicago in the winter. You pretty much stay
to
indoors.
some degree, but even in a very hot, even in the mid 90s here, with humidity and everything else, there's a breeze, there's a little cooling off. If you're in the right place, you're more in desert, and so the evenings are a little bit more pleasant. In winter in Chicago, you really have months of not leaving your house except to go to the car and to wherever you're going and run back in as fast as you can. Even the heat here is not that bad. And evenings, I can go out for walks in the most evenings and early morning. There's a good chunk of the day in the middle that's pretty hot. But then again, I don't have much a coping mechanism for extreme heat or extreme cold. So I think I'm much better off here.
So, aside from the weather, which can be challenging here and there, what are some of the other challenges that you faced in moving to Israel? And remind me, when did you move to Israel from Chicago? How many years ago?
I actually moved in November 2019, several months before COVID. I did not have a place of my own until the following August. So I was blessed to spend COVID with my daughter and her four boys and her husband and to live with them for many months. And it was a delight. In Chicago, they had been my neighbors. They moved to Israel in 2014. So I had several years without them. And it was nice to get back in the groove with them for all of those months. So I'm one of those people that thought COVID was just terrific. I mean, it doesn't sound right to say that, but it worked well for me. I was with my kids and I was certainly safe and well taken care of. And then I moved into my own place in August as things were dying down a bit.
So COVID was definitely a challenge for most, but it was glorious for you because you got to be with your grandchildren and with your children.
It really was a treat.
You didn't have to worry about socializing. You didn't have to worry about anything. And Israel was much stricter than they were in America in terms of the lockdowns.
And we followed the rules as they came out. Each rule that came out, we followed to the T. So we were not like, you know, maybe a little of this. We stuck to the rules as they came out and followed them. And they were very strict here, that's for sure. And it did affect my grandson who had his bar mitzvah in April, I think it was 2020. And it was, you know, they planned a big, nice bar mitzvah that was lovely. And it turned out to be 19 people in a tent. And 19 seems like an odd number, but 19 was the number that came out on the Wednesday before his bar mitzvah, and 19 it was. So, you know, there was fines and policemen and all sorts of enforcement officers trying to make sure you stuck with the rules as they were, and we did. It was a beautiful event, and he was happy as could be. However, it wasn't what they had planned and what he had hoped for when they all started the planning years before, as people do for bar mitzvah.
Very, very different than your grandson's wedding.
True, true. Yeah. That was lots of people very happy, all celebrating together without masks.
Without masks was great. Without the lockdowns was amazing. People in Israel did get vaccines, right? You did get the COVID vaccine and the booster shots.
The minute they came out was the minute we signed up. And the minute I could get one, I did. I'm definitely a pro-vaxxer person for whatever comes up. Any new vaccines that have come out since then for other things, jumped right in. I want to live here many years in good health. So I follow the rules on that one too.
Amen. That sounds great for all of us. What are some of the other challenges? I mean, my impression, and I've lived in Israel and I've traveled to Israel many, many times. Everything is more challenging there. Everything is just a little bit harder. The grocery stores, and I can't even imagine moving to Israel and having to read an electricity bill. Even though I've learned Hebrew, I speak Hebrew, that's another level of Hebrew that you have to know. How did you manage all of that?
So first of all, I don't really think of them as challenges. They're all adventures. Everything here to me is an adventure, and I have an adventure a day. If I wanted the same as what I had in Chicago, I would have stayed in Chicago. But everything here becomes an adventure. Oh, I didn't know that. Now, Hebrew's another issue. I did come here speaking Hebrew, but have been working consistently to improve my vocabulary, give myself a little more confidence in speaking. I live in a community where most people speak English and where there is a lot of help and support for new immigrants. And so I don't really find it quite that bad. When I go to the supermarket and I don't know what something is called, I look on the internet and I find a picture and I show the picture to the nice man in the store and I go, Zeh, ani rotza et zeh. And then they say, we have it, we don't have it. And that's the stuff I understand. I may not be able to ask for exactly what I want, but with a picture and a hand motion and Hebrew a little, and sometimes even English, and sometimes help from people who are in the supermarket who are much more knowledgeable about all of these things in the store than I am. I get lots of help around. People are always happy to help in every way possible. The idea of taking care of older people here and taking care of new immigrants is way up high on the list of what you can do to be, you know, supportive of your community. People are always happy to make it a little bit easier and to make sure you get what you want and that you're understood, and that lots of people have stepped up for me in different situations where I couldn't explain what I wanted or the person listening wasn't really interested in taking the time to hear my whole sentence to explain one word that I didn't know. But it's, you know, it all makes great stories afterwards. So they're adventures.
I love that. I love your attitude that everything is an adventure. I love your attitude that you want to learn and you want to grow. Growth mindset is incredibly important. That's really beautiful. So share some stories with us. Share a great moment of challenge and adversity that you were able to overcome and laugh about it.
Can't think of necessarily challenge and adversity. Most things just sort of, they come and go, and I don't think of them as challenges or adversities. But there have been moments that were extremely memorable and things that have stood out. You know, since things have changed around here a bit, unfortunately, many soldiers have died and they have funerals. And it has become a custom here that the family is escorted from their home as they leave to go to the cemetery by people in the neighborhood waving flags. And very often here, funerals are take place very late at night, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. And I have a group of friends, like-minded friends. Are you going? Oh, yeah, I'll be outside. Pick me up. And my flag and I head on outside to comfort the mourners. I don't know the soldier. I don't know his family. I don't know anything about him except a small blurb that says he's from your town or from a town nearby and that he was killed fighting. And that family deserves, to me, the utmost outpouring from the entire community and the entire country who love these soldiers as if they were their own. We have gone to their mourning homes, don't know them, went to a hotel in Jerusalem for a soldier who died from up the street, was supposed to get married, and he's French. His parents only speak French. I don't speak French. And we went to console the family. It was interesting. But life here is very interesting. So that was...
They were appreciative, I have no doubt.
That's one of my more memorable moments. Another thing that is extremely interesting here that I didn't give much thought to, the whole calendar here is the Jewish calendar. Everything here is connected to the Jewish calendar, whether you're religious or not religious. Wherever you go on Friday, they're going to tell you Shabbat Shalom. The supermarket is filled with all of the, every supermarket is filled with the foods needed to prepare for whatever holiday is coming. Leading up to Hanukkah, you got those sufganiyot donuts all over. Hanukkah's over, no more. You're on to Purim, we're on to the next holiday. And you start seeing Hamantaschen everywhere. So the country is you're on a different calendar. There's no 4th of July and there's no Thanksgiving, although many people do mark those dates, reminding them of things in America. But it's easy to miss those dates because it's like every other day of the week. But every holiday here is marked. Tu B'Shvat is a major national holiday. In America, I paid for trees to be planted in Israel. And in school, we ate that very hard brown bucks or stuff that broke your teeth. Here, they don't do that at all. I mean, it's all sorts of fruits and vegetables that are in season and planting trees. And when I was here the first year, when I did Tu B'Shvat, it was just before COVID, a few weeks before COVID. And we went to one of the first places that they planted trees in the north of Israel. A whole busload of people went and we got to plant trees there. That's a picture I really think is special. It sits in my head as a wonderful day and an opportunity to take that holiday back as the national holiday that it is, that is not really very well connected or very much thought of in America. I would be surprised if most Jewish people even heard of that holiday, but here it is a big deal. So that stuff is pretty cool.
Do you miss Thanksgiving and 4th of July and Memorial Day and Labor Day here?
Well, Memorial Day comes during that season after Pesach, where we have all of our own memorial days, Memorial Day for the Holocaust, Memorial Day for the soldiers, Israel Independence Day, Jerusalem Day, Lag BaOmer. There's all of these days in the Jewish calendar that make it Memorial Day sort of fades in. I do see the 4th of July in my calendar and I see it, but I've got enough other holidays here that are meaningful to me. So I don't really miss the American holidays that much. In November, we have a turkey. Okay.
Is there anything else in Chicago that you miss? I mean, you certainly explained that you miss your friends and the holidays you appreciate, but don't miss. I understand that. And there's certainly plenty of holidays to go around in the Jewish calendar. John Stewart once had this really funny joke and he said, wait, it's been 15 days. There must be a Jewish holiday. And he's about right.
He's probably close to right on that one. He's pretty close to right there.
There's always something.
The one thing I never miss about Chicago is the three-day holidays. When all of the Jewish holidays become 3 days or two days. But here the idea of one Passover Seder, it's easy to pick up on that.
That's enough.
That's easy. That's not really hard. Or one day of Sukkot and then the rest is the middle days where you can go off and do your thing. It's pretty cool. I got used to that very easily. That was a quick one. That did not take a long time to settle in.
No, that's reason enough. A lot of my friends and I joke that not having to observe that second day, which is necessary for everybody outside of Israel, is reason enough to move to Israel. And when do we say that? Every holiday on the second day. And certainly on the 3 day weekends, we turn to each other and we say, when are we moving to Israel? This is too much. It's too much shopping. It's too much cooking. It's too much cleaning. It's too much hosting. It's exhausting.
Indeed. I keep in touch with enough people through WhatsApp and through video chats and things of that sort that when you have a 3 day holiday, it's a long time for me not to talk to my American friends and family. I mean, it starts and it seems to never end. A 3 day holiday becomes 4 days or 5 days that I don't get to talk to them. I miss that part. I miss the talking part, but it's sometimes hard to remember that they're still holidaying. Well, I'm not holidaying anymore. I'm done. It's sometimes hard to remember that you can't call today. Today's not a day to call them. You got to wait 2 more days or 1 more day or whatever. So yeah, it's pretty cool over here. Pretty cool. I like it.
That's fantastic. When you moved to Israel, you had 3 children, 11 grandchildren, many other friends from Chicago. You had a great support system that a lot of people don't have. What were some of the challenges? And if somebody in America or in Europe is thinking about moving to Israel, and I hate to bring up a painful topic, but with the rise of anti-Semitism, with the threat of fascism, more and more Jews are considering moving to Israel. And it's not just here. It's in Western Europe. It's in Australia. It's in New Zealand. It is in many places. And what advice would you give to someone who is moving to Israel, who's retired like yourself, and you worked so, so, so hard in America, sometimes 2 and 3 jobs, but in Israel, you're retired and your job is taking care of your family, taking care of yourself, hosting people and friends like me when we come to visit, doing other volunteer work and other acts of good deeds, like you said, unfortunately, going to funerals when necessary. But certainly, even though you had a good support system, you have some advice to give to people who are considering moving to Israel. What would that be?
Well, it is certainly much easier to move here when you have children. I don't see my children that often, although they live basically around the corner from me. They have their own lives. They work. It's a 6-day work week here. Sunday is like every other day of the week. Friday's a little slower, but then again, it's Erev Shabbat. And so everybody, no matter how long the day is, we're never ready when Shabbat comes. Everybody's always, it's Friday. So no matter how you do it, it's not quite the same as Sunday. There are not a lot of family days like Sunday where you go off as your whole family. There aren't a lot of those in the calendar here. So I would say if you have family here or good friends to try to end up living near them. I came here with basically no friends in this town except my children. And I got introduced to one lady who said, oh, we're having a luncheon next week. Want to come? I said, sure. And after that, it was all done. I mean, I introduced myself at the luncheon, and the next day a lady called and said, you want to go for a walk? Another lady said, you want to come for dinner? Another lady said, I belong to this organization or that organization. Do you want to join and come to a meeting? And the phone's been ringing ever since. And people are incredibly hospitable. Now, there's definitely a difference between moving if you have children here. There's definitely a difference moving if all of your children are not here. And there, I'm sure, is a big difference if you move as a couple as opposed to a single person. So all of those impact, your success rate or your happiness rate here as a senior, as a retiree. But I certainly think that expecting changes, not expecting to make Israel like America, it isn't going to happen. You have to be prepared to look at these things as an adventure and just roll your eyes and go home and laugh about it and tell your friends and laugh about it, because they're not going to become you. I mean, I have a doctor's appointment at 10:04. Who makes a doctor's appointment at 10:04? It's 10 o'clock. It's 10:15. 10:04. And I go, what is that? What? I mean, it's not life changing.
What is that?
But every single time it happens, I go, what? What is going on here? What is this? Banking here is an experience. You pay to put your money in the bank. You pay to take your money out of the bank. I don't understand. I don't get it. But I don't have to get it. I just roll with it and I go, oh, okay, what can you do? There are always people here in the beginning to help you with questions and to help make things go. The senior community where I live in Modi'in, which is halfway between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, has a large Anglo population. And most of the seniors here are anxious to be independent and not be dependent on their children. So we kind of help each other with you know, WhatsApps and emails with this or this just happened. Now what do I do? And there's always somebody who's had the same experience or who's been here longer or who can help you over the hump. There's just, you know, just keep going with it. Foods I can't find in the supermarket, so I make something else. Okay. Even in America, there were things in recipes that you couldn't find kosher. So you didn't make that recipe, or you found a substitute, or you made it work, or you did something else. And that's kind of where I am here. And I think that's kind of where most of my friends are here. But I have a very, very large group of friends who are very, very supportive and very ready to do whatever it is you need them to do whenever you need it. So I'm very lucky that my children chose a good place to live and that I was able to follow them, and that all of my children are in the same time zone makes me very happy and makes my life easy. Just one other PS to that, Israel gives a lot of nice treats to seniors. So I came here when I was 70, so I got a senior card, which gives me discounts at certain places. And at 75, you get free transportation, buses, trains, intercity buses, city buses, all transportation. At 80, you get a card that says, like on Monopoly, skip the line. And I think that's pretty cool. So they keep giving you treats and treats and treats until you're 80, when that's a pretty good age to be getting your last treat. So I think this is a pretty fun place to live.
That's fantastic. A few months ago, my friend Aviva, who I think moved to Israel 10 years ago, she messaged me to let me know, remember that beautiful, amazing salad that you made with the mandarin oranges and the Chinese noodles? Well, I finally was able to make that recipe that you gave me years ago. It took me years and years to find in Israel celery seed spice. And she finally found the celery seed spice and she was able to make the salad, and she wanted to let me know.
And mine was mandarin oranges. It took me forever to find mandarin oranges. But now I think I know where you go now for mandarin oranges. I got that one covered.
But the truth is, being in Israel, it really does feel like mini America. Grocery shopping, the highway system, the hotels, the entertainment industry. It is really a beautiful, beautiful place. I can't think of many cities in the world who have Israel beat when it comes to food and arts and entertainment. And the Mediterranean Sea is glorious. And being in Eilat and just everywhere you go, there truly is an adventure. Not just the 4,000-year history that the Jews have had there, and you get to open up your chumash and take a look and say, hey, this happened right over there. Or you open up your Tanakh and you're like, right over there, that historical event happened. So that is pretty remarkable, but it's gotten easier over the years. Certainly Israel now, even compared to 30 years ago, it really has gotten much easier. And there's nothing that any tourist would be wanting or lacking when they're there. But as somebody who moves there, it definitely has its challenges in terms of language. It has its challenges in terms of change in weather, certainly for those of us from Chicago. It can be challenging if you don't have a large family, friend, support group like you. It can be challenging. Yes, definitely, you know, shopping at the grocery store is a little bit different and getting used to some of the cultural traditions. But one or the other. Not that those items and the day-to-day life are not important, but probably the biggest change in Israel.
Well, it's hard for me to answer that the way others might. I worked in America and I came here as retired. So I don't know what it's like here to work. I can only imagine that working Sunday through Thursday, it's really hard. It's really hard. And a lot of people travel to work. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to take off a half hour to do this or this. I mean, I live in Modi'in. I have a daughter who works in Tel Aviv. So anything that she needs to do, you know, you got to make sure that it works with the train schedule, with the bus schedule, with your work schedule, with your children's schedule, with school. Everything but it's complicated for people in America with young children as well who work, and people do that. But it's sometimes you feel it's a little harder here. I'm not sure it is. But then again, that's not my life's experience. And so I think that living here has given me a chance to do things that I've always wanted to do. Classes that are offered here in Jewish studies and in Torah are on the highest level, and they are as accessible as could be. When there's a Zoom, I'm in the right time zone. When there's a class, I get on a train and I can go into Jerusalem for a lecture, for a program, for a tour. Touring in Israel, as you mentioned, and seeing the places that I've read about in the Bible all of those years, everything that the Torah has shown me and the things that I've read about and learned about in classes is right there in front of me. And I know each day that I can get on a train and in a half hour, I can be in Jerusalem. That's got to be the fulfillment of a dream for a lot of people, but I know that it's a pinch me moment almost every day. I can't believe that I am so close to that and that I used to travel 6,000 miles to go to the Kotel and now maybe an hour. You know, it's just I live such a blessed life here. I really do live a blessed life. My friends are amazing, and there are many of them, and they come from all sorts of backgrounds and bring all sorts of skills. And I'm lucky to call them friends. This place is terrific. I mean, if you come with the right attitude, you got it made. If you don't come with the right attitude to any place, it's not going to work for you.
So true. But one of the things that is not so glorious and not so wonderful is Israel is at war right now. And they are fighting a 7-front war, 7 fronts. Most countries are not fighting even a single war. Israel is fighting 7 fronts simultaneously. So that is frightening, to say the least, dangerous. And your grandson himself is a soldier in the IDF and recently was serving in Gaza. So to those of us living in America who don't have a strong connection to Israel, who aren't Jewish, who perhaps have never read the Bible, who don't understand our 4,000-year history there, why would you risk your life? And certainly, why would you praise a country where your grandson, his life is very much in jeopardy every single time he serves? And he was called up right after his wedding. He was married last September, and October 7th happened in a blink of an eye. So help us reconcile that. Help somebody who isn't as strongly connected to Israel understand how you manage that on a day-to-day basis.
There's two questions there. That one, I'm going to answer your question a little later. In the early 2000s, my son came to Israel as a lone soldier. I was in Chicago, and I would talk to him periodically whenever he got his phone, whenever he had access to the phone. Every week, every other week, he tried to use his time to call the people he needed to talk to. My mother was alive at the time, so it was me, it was my mother, it was his sisters. He had a long phone list as well as friends. So I didn't hear from him real frequently, but we stayed in touch. I was truly disconnected. It was another harrowing time in Israel when he was here. It was the time when Israel left the Gaza Strip in 2005, and there was a lot going on. And I had this son, he was fighting, and I was proud of him, but I don't think I really knew what it meant in a different kind of way, in the day-to-day way here. And everybody in America was supportive of me. Everybody I knew said, how's your son? How's your son? How's your son? Wow. I live in Israel. People barely ask me, how's my grandson? Because my response is, thank God he's fine. How's your son? How's your son-in-law? How's your grandson? I don't think I know a handful of people here whose children live in Israel and don't have somebody serving. The only people I know who don't have children serving have children that are too young. They've moved to Israel and their children are too young. And their husbands were too old. So their husbands didn't serve and their children are not yet serving. My daughter came here with four boys. She knew what she was getting into with four boys and that they would all be in the army. And if you are a believer in the value of Israel and in the purpose of a country for the Jews and a homeland and an inheritance, you got to pay. And that's the price we pay. We send our sons and our daughters to the army. I've got another granddaughter going into the army this weekend. So, you know, it's one right after the other. I my youngest grandson is six. I can't imagine, I mean, I'll be one old person by the time my family is done worrying about the army. And it's quite likely that by then I will have great-grandchildren in the army and that I may never, ever see a day when I don't have somebody in my family in the army here, serving the country and defending the nation.
But you yourself are in danger. Rockets from the north, rockets from the south, they have not stopped. They have not ceased. Hamas took power in 2006 after we handed power back to them, and the 8,000 Jews who were living in Gaza, we left. It's our ancestral land, but to make peace, and we were promised if we left that there would be peace, but the rockets started immediately, and they haven't stopped, and they haven't stopped since October 7th, and now Hezbollah is firing rockets. I think you told me 50 yesterday alone. Your life is also in danger, not just your grandchildren who are serving in the army.
It's not the danger that worries me personally, for me. I worry for my children and grandchildren. But it's the things I want to do here, the places I want to go, the things I want to see, the experiences I want to have here that I can't have now. Because it is truly dangerous. And you have to be pretty foolish to walk into danger. It's one thing to live there and say it's my home. It's another thing to say, oh, I think I'll just go visit, you know, some place up north that had a rocket yesterday. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't think my children would be very happy if I did that. Even if I was fool enough to do it, I don't think my kids would be really happy if they heard I was going to any of those places. So it is what it is. And you get up every morning and you pray for a good day. And we all pray for the end of the war with a good ending. And we pray for the return of our soldiers in good body and in good spirits and in good emotional and as well as physical shape. And that's what you do. But I have a feeling that Jews around the world are praying with me and that they are
no doubt.
They are on Team Israel and that they are praying for the end of this war and for no more killing and for the soldiers to come home and for there truly to be peace in Israel and for some of our enemies to be, maybe a percent of our enemies just to be stopped in their tracks.
Well said. We're praying, absolutely. We're sending as much support as we can. Some of us are going to visit. Certainly all of us are in touch with our friends and family as much as possible. And people like me are trying to let the world know that we are a people of peace and we only wish for peace. We pray for peace. We live in peace. This is all we want. And we wish no harm on anybody and never have. But we are at war and we feel it very deeply here in America. And you are there physically with your life in danger. You yourself are conducting this interview inside your bomb shelter in your apartment, because every house, building, shopping center, movie theater, park, sports complex, there are bomb shelters built in Israel so that people have a safe place to go. That is a reality that we do not have to experience in America, even with all the threats of danger that we have here. But bombs and rockets are very real. You are blessed to have the Iron Dome. Let it continue to keep Israelis, all Israelis, safe. I mean, Israel is comprised of citizens from 130 countries, not just Jews. There are 1.6 million Arabs who have full citizenship there. And it's a very diverse democracy there. There's no question about that. So I wonder, in light of the risks that your family are taking in the army, you yourself having to deal with the rockets themselves and the dangers and being careful, how has living in Israel changed your political perspective on global events in the world?
All my life, I have believed that a strong America will be helpful to Israel, that Israel needs a strong America. So when I talk with friends here, when we talk politics, I start from a position of we need a strong America. Now, we may not all agree on what will give us a strong America, but I have always felt that that strong America was crucial in helping me decide who I would check off on a ballot. It's always been in my mind, maybe more so or less so, depending on the election and the situation in Israel or in America. But I have always put having a strong America as something crucial to me and to how I look at the world. I was a little bit knowledgeable of politics in Israel when I lived in America. Now I'm a little bit more knowledgeable. The TV news here is in Hebrew. So mostly I think I understand what I'm hearing. There are a lot of websites that are in English. So I generally, before I say anything, I check out what I heard, because what if I heard it backwards? You know, it only takes the word not to change the whole perspective. So I try to make sure that I get what's going on to the best of my ability. But I'm hopeful here that the current leadership will do the right thing to end this war with the best outcome possible for all involved. That's all you can hope for. What will happen after here politically? I'm not a prophet. I can't tell you what will happen. But I desperately hope that when we come to a ceasefire, an end, a withdrawal, a whatever, however this mess ends, that the soldiers come home safely. Hopefully the hostages will come home. As many of them are alive will come home alive, and the rest that their bodies will be returned to their families for proper burial. And I hope that we will see peace in the near future. Do I think that we will have permanent peace for the rest of eternity? Hard to say when you have people around you who still say, our goal is to kill you. It's hard to think that we're ever going to come to a place where we're going to be talking the same language. However, I'm not sure as a kid I ever thought we'd be talking to Egypt or to Jordan, and we've had peace treaties with both of them. So I'm going to stick around a little to see what's happening.
Definitely stick around. So on that note, how do you see your future in Israel unfolding? And what are your hopes and dreams for yourself, for your family, for your friends, for all of Israel?
For all of Israel, I think I just told you, that's really a hope for peace, a hope for calm, a hope for quiet, a hope for Israel to go back to being the startup nation and the economic success that it was last year this time, maybe even better. For me personally, I hope to watch my grandchildren grow up in good health and be able to achieve and accomplish whatever their goals are to be. I want to see what they become in life, as everybody wants to see where their children end up. You know, that little Dickens who was, you know, destroying your house 10 years ago, what's he going to be when he grows up? Is he really going to be a responsible member of society? And am I going to be able to see it? Because sometimes I look at some of the actions that I see and I go, oh my God, and this kid could grow up to be a doctor or a lawyer or a political leader or something. And you go, I'm not sure I can quite get a grip on that one, but I want to be able to see my grandchildren and what they will become and what they will contribute to this country and how they will make this country grow and flourish in the future. I want to continue to be active and volunteer. Today, I was volunteering for an organization that put together little quick backpack things for seniors that can't leave their home, that are homebound. So it had a little radio, and it had a flashlight, and it had a little lanyard for the flashlight, and it had batteries, and it had stress balls, and it had a little first aid kit, all for people who are in their homes and can't leave to go get these things that they really need to have in their home. And they're looking to do 15,000 bags to be delivered to people who will need this kind of support or might need this kind of support in the weeks and months and years ahead. I look forward to traveling throughout Israel from the very top to the very bottom, from the very north to the very south, and to walking along the Shvil Yisrael and the Shvil Hayam that goes all along the seashore. I look forward to trips to Europe because they're very close. And I hope that we will have enough friends among the nations of the world to make me feel comfortable in those countries and in those cities in years to come. That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
Those are beautiful hopes and dreams. And here's my hope. When are you coming to Chicago?
I don't know. When are you coming back to Israel?
We're working on it.
My guest room's open, and I'm hoping that tourism will pick up here quickly and that people will begin to come back to Israel. The stores need help. Businesses need help. Country needs economic support on a day-to-day basis. Living in America, you're not going to ask for a pizza delivered to your home, but that pizza place needs you. It needs me, but I can't do it alone. I need lots of help. I need tourists who are going to eat out. I need tourists who are going to shop. I need tourists who are going to stay in hotels. I need tourists who are going to hire tour guides. I need people who are going to rent buses for tours. And these are all businesses that are struggling mightily to stay open. They are trying to reinvent themselves in every which way possible. And I'm hoping that their lives get a little bit easier and that things go, you know, back to the quote unquote good old days of a few years ago, mainly pre-COVID. Since COVID, COVID's given a lot of these places a double whammy, and it's been tough. It's been tough.
Israel is a glorious country to visit. And I would encourage anybody who has the means to go and visit Israel. The hotels are beautiful. The food is wonderful. The arts and entertainment and everything that we spoke about before, you will lack nothing. You can have a 5-star, 6-star visit in Israel, and whatever you can dream of, you can do.
Mostly in this time, I will say that I have read reports from many people who came here a little anxious, not sure what they would find. To have come here and found a perfectly functioning country with nightlife and life going on to a good degree of what it was and always has been, just day-to-day life. And to talk to people here and to have a different impression than what you came with. Come and see what it's really like here. Come and meet the people. Come talk to the guy who takes your suitcase to your room, or the guy you sit next to on the bus. There's a good chance he speaks enough English to tell you that this is a pretty good place to live. And that, yeah, there's a little stress here right now, but This place has a lot going for it, and it's not what you hear on the news. It's not what the newscasters tell you. So come on along and visit. Make your own decision. See it for yourself.
5 years ago, when we came to Israel to visit, it was Pesach, and we decided to go to Zurich, Switzerland, after our visit in Israel, seeing friends and family and dealing with the holiday. And it was a beautiful visit. It was absolutely beautiful. It is really a lot of fun to be in Israel for Passover. So, okay. So a couple days later, we're in Switzerland and we're taking the trams up to the top of the Swiss Alps. And it's exciting, but it's a little bit stressful getting off the tram, getting on the tram. And there's four sets of cars that we had to take. And the kids, you know, were great and cooperative, and there was no complaints about that. We get in, I think, the third tram, and these two beautiful women get in. Chanel, Dolce & Gabbana, Gucci. They were dressed to the nines. Beautiful sunglasses. Everything about them was beautiful. And I asked them where they were from. And they said they were from Indonesia, but they had just been in Israel the day before. And I asked them why, and they said they were in Israel for pilgrimage. And I said, okay, very nice. Where were you staying? At the Mamilla Hotel. I said, that's fabulous. We just had dinner at the Mamilla Mall last night. We were right there with them. So we're coming from Chicago. These two beautiful women are coming from Indonesia. We have our common connection that we were both in Israel at the exact same location. And then we're on a tram car to the top of the Swiss Alps. That's Israel. You never know who you're going to meet, the experiences that you have there. People from all over the world are coming to visit for pilgrimage. Every religion is welcome. It is a true democracy. Everyone is safe and welcome there. How safe would you say it is now with the wars going on, with the rockets coming from the north and the south? If you were a tourist who has never been to Israel, do you really think that now is a good time to come? I know the importance of it, but is it really safe for them?
That's a hard question to answer, only because I obviously see, it's fine here. I don't see a problem. If it's your first trip, then there are things you might not be able to see, places you might not be able to go that you might want to go to. But Israel makes every effort to keep everything as open as possible and as normal and regular as possible. And I would say, come, see what you see, and plan your next visit.
And be careful. If you hire a tour guide, they'll tell you where to go and where safe. And they're not going to take you any place that puts you in jeopardy. The bus driver isn't going to go any place that puts you in jeopardy.
Except for random things that happened here, which could happen in any city and probably do happen to visitors in other cities in America or around the world. There haven't been tourists that really have been killed. Yeah, random events of a shooting or a stabbing. But I got to tell you, I think that same thing has happened in Chicago to random people. I think it's happened in New York. I know it's happened in other cities because I've read about it. And so that's a random thing that happens. But tour guides do not take people to dangerous places. They cancel plans as soon as they hear that it's not a place to go. If you use common sense, in any city you travel to, in the whole world, you're probably going to be okay. If you choose to go off on your own to someplace random because you thought that was a good idea and didn't ask anyone, probably not a good choice in a lot of places in the world.
This was so great. It was so great to see you. I'm so grateful for your time. I'm always so happy to see you. I'm so grateful to have you as my friend for all these years. Please send my love to your children. Please stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
And come back soon.
We will. We definitely will. Thanks, Shoshana. Have a great night.
You're welcome. My pleasure. It was my pleasure.
After a week of traveling in Israel, a week of Shiva, and a week of visiting friends and family, I'm now home. I came home last night. But like everyone else in Israel, I'm not okay. I mentioned to my friends Miriam and Donnie that I hadn't brought enough tissues for this trip, and Donnie quickly replied that there weren't enough tissues in all of Israel right now. That truly captures the profound pain we have all been experiencing since October 7th, both in Israel and around the world. Although I've been visiting Israel since 1988, my first summer to play basketball in a tournament, and lived there during a gap year before college, I have never felt the nation's pain so intensely. My friends and family have served or have children currently serving in the Israeli military, and the fear for their safety is immense and intense. My niece, who I visited last Friday, is in medical school, and she commented on how difficult it is to stay focused with her studies with the war going on. An Arab-Israeli cab driver shared his heartache over the lack of tourists in Israel, and he said all businesses are suffering. I believe 60,000 have closed since October 7th. Everyone is scared, everyone is exhausted, everyone is on edge, and in disbelief that the world has misinterpreted our story. But for the first time in Jewish history, we can live in Israel and democracies around the world in relative safety, which now seems to be crumbling before our eyes to some degree. In the past 11 months, 339 days to be exact, we have been praying and pleading for the release of the innocent Israeli hostages. Currently, 101 innocent men, women, and children, including 7 Americans, remain in captivity by Hamas. Rachel Goldberg-Polan, the mother of Hirsch, a dual American-Israeli citizen, solemnly marks each day of her son's captivity with a piece of masking tape on her shirt, counting the days since October 7th, one by one. I remember the painful video she posted when she ran out of masking tape and had to start a new role. Painful. A few weeks ago, that piece of tape silently bore the poignant phrase, "too many," starkly reflecting the unbearable anguish endured by her son before his assassination by Hamas last week, and the suffering of all those caught in this harrowing ordeal. Too many is precisely the correct number. Mrs. Wasserstrom would be proud of you, Rachel. At the Kotel, I donated to a tzedakah, a charity, and the rabbi gave me this red string to keep me safe. He asked which bracha or blessing I wished to receive, and I told him, peace in Israel. He was a bit taken aback and asked me why I didn't want a blessing for myself, and I told him that was for myself and all of Klal Yisrael, Jews worldwide. He then proceeded to bless me first with Birchat Yeladim, which is a prayer that we say to our children every Friday night. But it was the first time in my life that I had received this prayer, and it was extremely emotional. And it got me thinking about prayer in general. And the oldest Jewish prayer is Birchat Kohanim, a priestly blessing. And it's a prayer for peace. So we will continue to pray for peace, hope for peace, and live for peace, as we always have. But in the meantime, we are not okay. Thank you for joining me on this episode of On the Basis of Democracy. I hope you were as captivated by Shoshana's stories about her move from America to Israel as I was. I still cannot believe she is gone, but she will never be forgotten by me, by my family, or anyone who ever knew her. And I have no doubt she is up there somewhere, taking great care of Alexander, Almog, Carmel, Eden, Hirsch, and Ori. I can hear her saying now, "Come on, guys, we're in this together. We're going to be more than okay." Or the last thing she ever told me about my new podcast. I'm behind you all the way. I'm your host, Lisa Singer. Until we meet again, Shalom.
I'm going to give you 4 words. We are not all right. We are not all right when we see young girls pulled from their home and dragged through the streets. When we see grandmothers being pulled away and children shot in front of their families. We are not all right when right here in the city of New York, you had those who celebrate at the same time when the devastation is taking place in our city.
This is a time for choosing. This is a time to mourn. The moral in the mirror. hide behind your baby. Yeah, hide behind your kin. The Harvarders have rabies. They'd holocaust again. I don't understand. I don't understand how you can love yourself.
The tail.